broadcasting live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider. And you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996. The godfathers of podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Yes, I'm Donnie. That's Tid. It is Thursday, November 2nd. And for our avid, hardcore fans of the program, you will realize that unlike last week, Donnie's got a little bit more of his voice back. It's starting to return. The sickness from hell is wrapping up. It's still there. I've still got that sounds like a chronic smoker's cough, even though I've never smoked a day in my life. I've still got that cooking. But I'm a little bit better. Thanks to those people that messaged me on Instagram and Facebook and said, hey, I'm sick too. Hope you feel better. Like, yeah, everyone's sick. Let's all commiserate together. Let's all be miserable together. But I'm here and it is time for another installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting. But of course, I cannot do it without the Kurt Russell to my Goldie Hawn, the David Beckham to my Posh Spice, the Zendaya to my Tom Holland. He is Chris Tidwell. Notorious TID.
Wait a second. How come it was like I was the girl in the first two scenarios or the guy in the first two scenarios, and then all of a sudden I'm Zendaya in the last one?
I know you're fluid.
I appreciate it. I will say this week, Donnie, you sound less hospital and more jazz club.
Wow.
That's okay. Where you're at now, right? You're like, you know, the guy sitting back in the corner with a harmonica, throwing some scat out there. You know what I mean?
You can call me Donnie Gillespie for this.
That's not what I would call you at all, but okay.
It is. It's going to be a fun one, folks. It won't be nearly as scary as last week when we interviewed my longtime pal, Chris Kraus, the first and only Canadian head coach in NCAA men's basketball. If you missed that episode, please go back and check it out because it's a great chat with a longtime friend of the show. I was suffering through that episode. And even though things are a little bit better this week, I do want you to go back and check out that episode if you missed it. So please do. Tid, this past week, everything good?
Busier than a busier than a three-peckered billy goat. I don't know who says that, but apparently somebody did it one time, and I don't know. It stuck with me. Probably heard it in a movie, or a relative of mine said it, or something like that. I'm sure at some point. But yeah, no, it has been good. It has been crazy this time of year because gearing up for Halloween. You know what I mean? In the neighborhood, it's a big thing. Even though I don't have kids, but you know, the Halloween spirit is still alive and stuff like that. So you spend a lot of time watching all of the great horror movies and maybe get caught up on some that you haven't seen in quite some time. I even went so far this year, Donnie, that I know that yesterday wasn't, you know, Halloween was over, right? Already. But when I turned on the TV and Silence of the Lambs is on, you take the time, right? You take the time to revisit the classics like that. And I'll tell you, the movie holds up, except for one thing that always baffled me about this. I think they gave Hannibal Lecter too much credit. Now, hear me out on this. Correct me if I'm wrong. The most infamous scene in the movie, right, is, you know, when he does his escape, his breakout or whatever. So he attacks the two guards. Hannibal Lecter at this point is, you know, it probably in his 70s, I would say. He's been around for a minute, you would think, right? So here's a guy who took out the two guards, managed to hang somebody like he did in that bird position, you know, the angel position above the thing by himself, then drag a dead body to the elevator shaft and toss it in to the elevator shaft, right, of the guard that he took the face off of by himself. You know as well as I do that for one man to do this, I don't think it's Hannibal Lecter. I think there's only one dude who's probably strong enough at that age. You know what I mean?
I think what you're getting at is that Hannibal Lecter liked to keep fit and have fun.
That's all I'm saying. It's clear, and they didn't get the due that they were so rightfully deserving in that movie. The only mistake that I have with the entire Silence of the Lambs thing is there was no body break, Donnie.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that being said, it's time right now for the big hello. And this week's guest is making his record-setting fifth appearance on this show. Why have we had him on so many times? Well, because he's been gold every single time. Why does he agree to keep coming back? I'm assuming it's because his accountant hasn't told him that none of our checks have cleared. For parts of the past five decades, he and his wife, Joanne, have been the faces of fitness for Canadians. He was a multi-sport athlete in high school who ended up getting a full ride to the University of Colorado to play baseball. In the 80s, he started his series of fitness shorts known as Body Break. And not only did these short segments help Canadians pick up tips on how to stay active and healthy, but along with his partner, Joanne, they managed to break down a lot of the stigma and issues that were still prevalent when it comes to mixed race pairings on television. He's been very outspoken on this issue on this program in the past, and he is never shy when it comes to speaking out about how he really feels, and that is the main reason we love having him back. Ladies and gentlemen, he'd rather be out going for a run or in his gym lifting a ton, loves outdoor activities out in the sun, he always eats well, put down the sticky bun, he wants you all to keep fit and have fun. This is our friend, the great Hal Johnson.
Thanks for the intro. Now, you guys have the best intros. Thank you very much.
How are you, Mr. Johnson?
Very good. Very good. Yes.
It's always a blast to have you on, my friend, and we always appreciate when you take time out. And as I mentioned to you off air right before we started, we know it's past bedtime because you've let us know in the past. So it's always a sacrifice, literally, when you hang out with us. So we don't take that for granted. And it's always appreciated. How have you been? I feel like anytime I pay attention to your social media, you are everywhere. Like you are all over the globe. You're doing things. You're constantly making me feel bad about myself because you get more done in a day than I do in about 6 months when it comes to physical fitness and activity. So I'm constantly reassessing my life choices. But how have you been?
Well, actually, on social media, I don't post very much because
it's still more than I do.
Because I want to, two reasons. One is I want to be in the moment of doing it. And then when I've finished it, I don't feel like going back and sending something out or whatever. But occasionally some special things that we've sent out. But this last year, we were in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And that was fantastic.
Was that your first time there?
Yeah, first time there in Abu Dhabi and then Dubai. And we cycled. We've gotten in the last year and a half or so, 2 years, we've gotten really big into cycling, and it will really help your cough, Donnie. The cycling when you get out there, you get that cardio going. But it will. What you do is we in Dubai, they have an 85 kilometer track out in the middle of the desert, and so we went out and we rode the track. It's just for cyclists. That's it. And it's just unbelievably beautiful, just outside Dubai. We did that, and it was great. And so I've really gotten into cycling, so is Joanne. And that's one of the really key things, is we do it together. And like we did this past summer, we were the honorary spokespeople or lead riders for the Baycrest Ride for Heart this year, or a ride for Baycrest. And it was a ride that takes up the Don Valley Parkway and the lakeshore in Toronto, for those who know it, and you get to ride on the lakeshore. We did 50 kilometers on that. That was a fun ride. And then we trained all summer, and we did all kinds of rides in Ontario on rail trails. So those are old trails that were railroad lines, but now they're used as cycling and running trails. So we've been doing that, and the culmination of it this summer was we went from Washington, D.C. to Pittsburgh. So it was about a 600-kilometer bike ride, and we did, Joanne and I did that together on our bikes, and all we had was our bikes, and you want to get from point A to point B, you got to ride. So we got a lot more scheduled for next year.
So I was going to say, I have to ask, because I know you by now, you've got a plan in place. Is it to go to BC? Is it to go to California? Is it to go to Mexico? How far are you going on the bike ride next year?
Well, it's the one thing we try to do is we try to couple the bike rides with the Blue Jays. Although with all the bad trades that they make, I mean, why did they trade Marino? I have no idea.
Like, brutal, right?
You guys have talked about it. It's just, I have some theories of why they got rid of a whole group of players that are from a certain part of the world. But they wanted to literally change the culture of the team. And they certainly did. And I think that's... Yeah.
Let's trade this young star in the making and bring in a guy that can't hit a beach ball. Sweet.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And if you don't lose your job after that one trade, like, that doesn't make any sense. And you've got another catcher who, and I said this, and not even jokingly, I think I could outrun him now. And, Kirk, I literally could outrun him, man. I reckon. And I wasn't the fastest runner in my prime. So, I mean, he's bad. And,
I mean, Kirk rolls more than he runs.
I mean, he's a double play. You know, if he hits in the outfield, he could double him up. But
yeah,
You Toronto fans are fucking ruthless, man.
Nothing he's saying is untrue. And the only defense you can make for the Blue Jays front office is the fact that it's baseball. And in baseball, if you're successful 30% of the time, you're a superstar. So I guess that logic goes to the front office as well. They can screw up 70% of the time and they're still hitting 300.
Atkins should lose his job for that.
100%.
That was just terrible. But that being said, we're still Blue Jay fans. And so what we try to do is we try to couple our trips with the Blue Jays. So, for example, that Washington to Pittsburgh ride, the Jays were playing Baltimore the day before. So we coupled our trip. So we actually went down to Baltimore. We drove our truck to Pittsburgh, dropped it off at the train station, rented another pickup truck, drove it to Baltimore, dropped it off. Now all we've got is our bikes, and we're right next to Camden Yards. And we stayed there, watched the Blue Jays win, beat the Orioles. And then we, next morning, hopped on the train to Washington, D.C., and then rode to Pittsburgh. So that was great having the Blue Jays and cycling. It was a great trip.
Okay, so let me ask you a logistical question, because one thing I do like to do when it comes to being active, I do love riding my bike.
He likes the bell.
I do have a bell.
That's good.
Now, one of the things is, I'm one of these guys, Hal, that when I get a hobby, no matter what it is, and I think you're like this too, I want accessories. I want to go shopping. I want everything. I know, like with your audio video equipment, you've got everything under the sun at home, right? And so that's why I think we're similar in this way. When I got back into biking as an adult a few years ago, I hit up the cycle shop and I'm buying like the mount for the handlebars for my cell phone. I've got like bags under the stock underneath the frame. I've got a bag under the seat. I've got a super comfortable seat. I've got a rear flashing light. I've got a headlight on the front. I've got all kinds of like different things. I've got an emergency repair kit built in. I've got a first aid kit built in. I've got everything. When you're talking about doing these long distance rides, is your bike completely tricked out with accessories and gear?
Yes.
You've got everything.
Absolutely. Okay. Carbon fiber wheels. We've got the head units, which is the little computer you put on Garmin's tells you where to go, gives you all your stats, all that stuff. We've got everything. I got a GoPro in the front, another GoPro, filming the whole trip. And we've got what are called tail fins off the back, and Joanne and I, our bikes are identical. They're the same bike. Like, they're the same color, same everything. Because I went and did all the research. went and bought this bike. And I said to Joanna, I said, this is the bike I'm going to buy. And she goes, she looks, she goes, well, I want one of those too. I said, yeah, but do you, like, I'm getting carbon fiber. Or she goes, I want carbon fiber too. I said, but are you going to appreciate that? Well, I want it. And so, and they come in two, this particular model comes in two different colors. And I said, well, I'm going to have the bright orangey red one. She goes, I want that too.
Hal, I feel like this equality thing has been going on far too long now. It's bleeding into your comfort zone, to your bike riding time, man. You gotta have words here.
Well, see, then when we pull up, you know, and our bikes are like flashy because they're bright. We have the wheels on them that are I don't know if you like there's regular wheels, and then ours are like this wide, the rims. So that's like the racing ones, and they look, you know, pretty flashy. So we pull up and people go, oh, you got the expensive bikes, you know? And it's like, you know, it's like, well, no, it's something, it's funny. As you get older, you just say, you know what? I worked all my years for this. I'm going to splurge, whatever it is.
Sure.
Right. So, but we really used it. We would go out on every week, and we'd do like a 100K ride every week. And so we'd go down to Barrie, for example, or Orillia, and you'd go, you can ride from Orillia to Penetanguishene and back, and that's 100K. So we would go and do that. And that was pre kind of getting ready for the trips.
I don't even like to drive that far.
But it was perfectly good, great trails, and these are gravel bikes that we have. And so the and then on our one of our goals this summer was to do 100 miles in a day. So that's 160 kilometers. So we did that in one day, and so that was again, we set a goal at the beginning of the year. I've never ridden 100 miles in a day, so we wanted to hit the century. And 100 miles on gravel is like about 130 to 140 miles on the road. It's because you've got a lot of resistance going against you there. So, but again, it's a great activity, a great adventure, and there's some adventures. You know, as you said, Chris, I'm looking at some other things. I'm looking at doing the Danube in Europe and Germany, going all along the river, River Danube. It's only about 400 kilometers that ride. We are definitely going to go Cincinnati to Cleveland next year. The Jays, when they play in Cleveland, we'll catch the game. Then we'll go to Cincinnati because there's a trail that goes that. It's about another 550 kilometer trail that goes from Pittsburgh to Cincinnati. The big thing with me is I don't like riding on roads. I don't trust. I mean, there's too many marijuana shops that are out now that I don't trust, or I don't trust people driving. I think that they're either high or high, right? Yeah. So
that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. We don't trust you people either.
I think. They can veer off just a little. Hey, how you doing? Boom.
Because your bike's got more fancy crap on it than my vehicle does. That's the problem, Al.
Hey, let me ask you, since you and your wife have the carbon fiber Rolls Royces of bikes, is it sacrilegious to ask if your bikes have pedal assist?
Oh, e-bike?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to a guy when you're on the trail, you meet up with different people, and it's fascinating. Right. That you meet up with these people. And I'll give you a story about one person that I met up with in just a sec. But, and this guy, I didn't see him. I just saw, we're at a washroom area, and he go, hey, where are you from? Oh, I say, oh, I'm, you know, from Canada. Oh, wow. I'm from California. This is great. This trail is great. Oh yeah. I've been going all over this. Yeah. And I, you know, I did like 100 or 90 miles, and I did this, and oh, that's great. You know, and I'm thinking, God isn't looking that good of shape, but that's good on him, right? And I see his bike. I mean, the battery on the thing was, you know, it was huge. It was bigger than the battery in my car. I mean, it was like, and I'm thinking, like, that's not really cycling. It's kind of like you got a motor. It's like, and it's, I understand there's a place. There is a place for e-bikes. Like if a couple, for example, or friends, a friend can't keep up and you will still want to, you know, the half of it or a lot of it is the camaraderie. You know, you're having lunch together, you're having breaks together, all kinds of things. It's great. So you can still have that social element and not be out because you can't keep up to your other friends. I think it's, and people have had heart attacks or those types of things that can't push themselves. It's a fantastic thing. But when you got a 23-year-old who's like, you know, like, come on, you know, just, and a little chunky. Well, you're a little chunky because you're not moving your own body.
And which is a fair comment. But I got to tell you this, my cousin, who, by the way, I want to give a shout out, Humberto da Silva, is releasing his first book. He's got a book release party next Wednesday. Next Thursday. I'll post the information for it on godfathersofpodcasting.com. But Humberto, he owns not one, but two e-bikes. And one of them looks like a big old chopper because he's like a 70s punk rock kid. And the other one is just like a very traditional looking bike. I've ridden these for fun. Okay, Hal, I get what you're saying about the fitness factor. But they're fun. Like, they're really fun. Like, it's ridiculously fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great, but understand what you're doing. I'm going to go have some fun, or I'm going to go actually push my body, push myself to the limit. When you finish for us, and I think, you know, what we did for us was we accomplished our goals and we pushed ourselves, and there's a tremendous sense of accomplishment. That especially as a couple, you know, doing this as a couple, a tremendous sense of, you know, we look at each other and go, way to go, Joe. And she goes, way to go, Hal. You know, just, it's like, you know, we did this together. We pushed ourselves. I know we were going through a place called Cumberland, and this route between Washington, D.C. and Pittsburgh, it's Civil War towns that you're going through, which is quite fascinating. And yeah, a lot of slavery, places where slaves, churches where they would hide, and a lot of history. It was in one of the biggest battles in the Civil War was an anthem, which was, we went right through that. So it was fascinating history. And we're in a place outside of Cumberland, in a place called Frostburg, and Joanne had kind of hit a wall. We had a really hard day the day before, very hot. We did about 115 kilometers, and it was about, we were about, in the saddle, we're in the saddle for about 6 hours. So you're on the bike for about 6 hours, but the total day is about 10 hours with everything of riding. But she hit a wall, and I said to her, she goes, you know, I'm having a hard time. And I just said, you know what, Joe, you can do it. You can do it. I know you can push through. And she did, and she went over that wall, and we got to that end of that day, and she goes, oh, thanks for pushing, and it was like, it was a teamwork, you know. It was fantastic. Before I forget, though, I want to tell you this one fascinating guy that we met just outside of Cumberland, and it was he was late 60s, and he's retired. He's an insurance guy, and we're sitting having a break and just having something to eat, and he says, oh, he's at the next bench, and he says, oh, these guys, what are these guys doing? And Joanne and I both look over, and he looks at us, and then he comes over to our bench, and there's a sticker on our bench, and he goes, oh, that's these guys here, they're white nationalists, and they're tearing our country apart. And I said, well, you know, we're exhausted. I just come up like 40 kilometers up a hill. It was really, I was like pretty beat. I didn't really want to have a political discussion with the guy at the time.
Right.
And I said, yeah, well, we're from Canada, so, you know, we don't really talk about politics. And I'm just and I said to him, I go, he says, oh, yeah, that, you know, you Canada, you guys have that health care. That's great. We should have that health care here. I said, well, you know, it has its pros and cons, but, you know, by and large, it's pretty good, you know. And he goes, yeah, and the guns that we have in the States, it's terrible we have these guns. And we should, you know, this First Amendment right is stupid. And I go, well, yeah, but we have guns in Canada, but, you know, it's not like here. You know, it's kind of frowned upon. I don't know anybody who's got a gun or ever owns one. He goes, yeah. And then he was talking about how, you know, how this abortion stuff, it's terrible that they're taking away this abortion from women. And I said, yeah. And then he says, yeah, three of my four kids are, he's a white guy, and three of my four kids are with people of color. I said, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And then I get up to leave, and I say to him, I said, you know, I don't know how anybody could vote for Trump. And he goes, oh, I do. I was like, what? Like, you just said you're anti-guns, you think abortion's okay, and you want health care, and your kids are with interracial people, and you're voting for Trump. Joanne just says to me, we gotta go. I said, okay. We get on the bike, and Joanne says, you know what is wrong with the US? I said, what? Their educational system. They're morons. You know, I just like, I had no words. I could not figure out how this guy could conflate those two things together. And I tried to explain to him. I said, you know, I kind of look at politics as, you know, there's good on both teams, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. That you have, like I said, you know, the Baltimore Orioles. We saw the Baltimore Orioles. They're a different team than the Blue Jays, but they got a fantastic third baseman and a great catcher. Mm-hmm. I appreciate them for what they are. They're really good. I don't like the team, but there's individuals that are very sure. good. And I'd love to have them on my team. Sure. But I said, you can't villainize the other people, the other team, because then you can't, you know, find common ground. And he says, no, it's the Democrats are this and that, Biden's this. I'm going, oh my God, you're an idiot.
But it's idiocy across the board. Like, I think the difference, you know, in Canada, I've noticed, because I am an American as well, so I see that side of it too, and my family lives down there, so trust me, I get where you're coming from. I think that Canada, when they look at their politics, though, they look at it as like, okay, these are the topics, these are the hot button items, and we're looking to try to find solutions for us as a whole, or the people next door to me. Whereas in the States, because everything is just that much different, I think everybody's looking at it. So I may think that the abortion thing is bad. I may think that guns are horribly bad. I may think that all of these things that you said with this guy are horribly bad. But you know what? I make so much money that I'm really going to need that tax break. And that's the guy who's going to give me that tax break, because it's about me. It's about me and not the person next to me. And I think that's one of the biggest underlying differences, you know. And so when you go down there and you meet these people on your journeys and stuff like that, as much as you're like, yep, no, I'm with you, but then they take a complete 180 the other way, and you're like, wow, how can this happen? How it's idiocy at its best.
Yeah.
There's also just a lack of understanding, especially in the United States, and now it's becoming more prevalent in Canada that we're seeing it, which is this voting with party lines and being completely oblivious to what the platform has in it. It's just, that's my guy. He represents my party. That's how I vote. You know, and this guy that you ran into, he's like, hey, three of my kids are dating black people. It's the Mexicans and the Chinese I can't stand. So that's why I support Trump. So, you know, that type of idiocy is mind-boggling. Even the other day, I saw this video. I was just scrolling on YouTube, and I saw this video, Justin Trudeau, he's out making the rounds, right? For our American listeners who don't know anything about Canadian politics, he's our leader, and he's out making the rounds. And there's some guy who's there filming, and Justin walks up to him and goes to shake his hand, and the guy looks him in the face and goes, fuck you. And he's like, oh, okay. Have I done something to you, sir? Yeah, you ruined our fucking country. Instead of walking away, he stands his ground like a real politician, says, tell me how I've done that, sir, and how can I make it better for you? And this guy now has private audience with the Prime Minister of Canada to intelligently articulate whatever his concerns may be. What does he do? He spends the next 90 seconds shouting out conspiracy theories, tossing out more swear words, insults, and literally saying nothing. He sounded like a complete moron. And then when you look on YouTube and you look at the comments of people, yeah, you told him, you told him. It's like, you're all idiots. You're all idiots. This guy had a private audience with the Prime Minister of Canada. Is he a perfect leader? No. Is there one? No. But if you want to say to him, you ruined our country, the one thing he brought up, oh, you gave us this stupid carbon tax. And he's like, okay, to help our environment. And it's putting money back in your pocket, sir. No, it's not. You're giving it all to Ukraine, you criminal. Ay, ay, ay. Like,
yeah. But there's always going to be, 50%.
50%, it seems like. It's, you know what I mean?
The amount of misinformation when it comes to our political scene right now, especially as people get their news from sitting online, right? And then he makes a comment. Trudeau says to the guy as he's leaving, he goes, you know what? That's not actually the case. You should probably watch the news and see what the story really is. And the guy goes, I can't get the news. You blocked it, you idiot. It's like, these morons actually believe that Justin Trudeau is blocking news agencies in Canada on social media. They don't understand that the bill was put in place because the largest social media conglomerate on the planet was refusing to pay distribution fees to the creators of the content. The thing that we've had in place in the music industry for decades and decades, where an artist gets paid if you want to play their music, that's what the Canadian government had told Meta. You want to have CBC News, CTV News, Global News, and have links to their stuff on your platform, which drives traffic for you, and you're making money on that traffic. You have to pay a portion of that money to those Canadian news agencies. They said, no, we'll just shut it down. How is that a bad thing that Trudeau is fighting for the rights of Canadians to get them paid for their work?
Justin Trudeau.
Understand the intellect of people today. So while I agree with Joanne when she says, oh my God, these Americans are stupid, we got some stupid people here too.
No, absolutely.
Justin Trudeau is Lars Ulrich. Remember when Metallica did that same exact move to Napster and everybody had to get paid for their music? You know what I mean? This is everybody gets used to, everybody gets used to stuff for free. You know what I mean? But the days of sticking the penny to the little card with your 11 selections and sending it off to Columbia House with the thought of never getting, you know, never paying it off or anything like that, those days are over. Those days are long done.
I did that about five times. At
university. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. What were the names? Because I did like C. Tidwell and Chris Tidwell and Chris T. and Lee Tidwell. And oh, yeah, I had a CD collection, Hal. What were yours?
Well, mine weren't CDs. Mine were vinyl.
So oh, vinyl. Yeah. Better.
I had cassette tapes coming through Columbia House. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it's funny. One of my sister's best friends to this day that she went to high school with, her dad was the president of Columbia House. So when I met him, I was like, I have conned your company for so much money.
One of the records I remember was Dan Hill. Sometimes When We Touch.
Okay, yeah.
Honesty's Too Much. And it was, and I remember that so fondly because I was down the States playing ball and university, and he was Canadian, and it was like listening to this Canadian, and I was like, oh, Dan Hill, oh yeah, and then I got to really like it, like his music. But yeah, he's from Toronto, I think Dan Hill is. So.
Do you still put on vinyl?
No, I don't. I got rid of all the vinyl. I'm a streamer, but I'm huge music, and actually, I put together a compilation of about I think about 45 hours of music to ride by. So I just hit it and then go. So it almost lasted me the trip.
Some Pointer Sisters.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the theme from Rocky.
No, I didn't use it. It's like Earth, Wind, and Fire is my go-to.
Okay.
The Emotions and it's Teddy Pendergrass, Harold Melville and the Blue Notes,
The Whispers.
Whispers, yeah, the Manhattan.
Hey, former guest on this show, the Whispers.
So it's
That's awesome. You know what? You should have a playlist, like a Spotify playlist that people can like listen to the same music Hal Johnson listens to.
I was just gonna suggest that same thing. If you, because I do listen to other people's like playlists, like on Amazon and stuff like that. I'll go to a playlist, people will put it together, and I'm like, yeah, let's check it out. If you did something like that, absolutely. Listen, I know people that have made a character, a WWE 2K, whatever the game is. I don't play those things, but I saw it online where somebody made a character, a usable character that you could purchase, I guess, something like that, of you and Joanne. So you guys are even wrestling figures. So if you were to put a playlist out there, just the sheer nostalgia from Canadians, dude, it would get over huge.
You should, you know, those downloadable characters are free. They're not for purchase, so you can't sue anybody, Hal. Yeah, you're not going to make any money off it.
The thing is, it's funny because I find now is – you reach a point, again, you guys aren't at the same bridge that I'm at, but it's like you reach a point where you kind of go, why am I going to do this? Like, why am I going to do this work? If you do it for I'm doing it for the money, I want to make money off of doing this, that's understandable. When you say, I love doing it, I've come to a point where I just like to do nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I know that Donnie, we talked about maybe I was thinking about putting a podcast together, and I was thinking about doing some different things, and I've got the knowledge of production. I understand how to do all that, but I always say to myself, why? Like, why do I want, like, why? Like, I'd rather be, you know, going to play hockey or going for a bike ride or going to doing stuff. And I find it's funny, a transition, like on social media. One of the reasons that I don't post a lot of stuff that we do at the time that we're doing it is I don't want to say to people, hey, I'm not home. I'm over in Portugal, you know, for the next 10 days.
Right. Yeah.
Come on down. My house is ready for you. So, because, you know, people where I live, a lot of people know where we live. And it's like, you just kind of, you don't post stuff. Whenever we're there, I'm always posting it after we return. And so that's, you know, one thing. And then when we get back, I go, you know, like, and then I ask, why am I posting? Am I posting it to brag, hey, look where I've been, which isn't very flattering? Or are you doing it, you know, to inform some of your friends? Oh, I'm here, but the friends that I care about, they already know where I'm at, and who care about us. So I've had a kind of the only reason that I will post is usually it's brand related. So it's to be with, well, here's what the brand is doing in terms of, here's what Body Breaks out there. You know, still kicking, still doing, you know, doing our thing. And hopefully it can be a little bit of a motivation to people as they get older that, hey, you know, don't stop, just keep going. But, that's kind of how, since COVID, I think it's happened since COVID that I've kind of made this transition.
Here's my thought on it though, Hal, is I think that like your story is tremendous. Your trips are tremendous. You're not doing nothing. You know what I mean? You're probably busier than you were when you were had a job, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Right? So it's not for lack of that, but I think that it's because your story and stories are so good. Maybe it's, you know, just myself included, but there's like they deserve to be told somehow. So either you've got to start telling those stories through social media somehow, podcasting, something like that. Or there's going to have to be a Hal Johnson book.
No. Well, we did a book 23 years ago all about fitness. We did that book. And in that book, we told the story of Body Break, how we got started and that sort of thing. It was kind of a fun thing. We sold about 45,000 copies of that book in Canada, which was
astronomical in Canada.
Yeah, it was quite. But we did it in a very unique way. And it was kind of I went to Sears. And I knocked on Sears' door, and I said, would you carry our book? This is back in, in the late 90s. And they said, no, we won't, but you might want to go talk to the people who deal with the fitness equipment. So I went up to that floor, and it's on Jarvis. They used to have their big Sears building. And I went in there, and I talked to this woman named Sheila Gratt. And she said, you know, what if we, would you be amenable to putting, having it put in every piece of fitness equipment that Sears sells? I said, like any major piece of equipment, treadmills and bikes and steppers? I said, sure. And so if I were to sell it to a bookstore, I would basically make about, because I self-published, I'd basically make about $2 per book. Right. And but with Sheila, she said, well, how much do the books sell for? I said, well, they're selling for $25. She goes, well, how much would you sell it to us for? And I just thought about it. I go, 15? She goes, oh, okay. So they and so the book costs us $2.45 to copy or to print. So it was like Sheila was a godsend because we had no money. We spent our last kind of dimes just putting all that together. And she was she really helped us out. But it was
I love that.
We ended up selling like 45,000 copies of this book through Sears, which was phenomenal.
Oh my God, I love that.
Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm thinking, though. It's a book about your bike ride adventures. You know what I mean? Different places. You come across Bigfoot. You see different creatures. You know, all in your adventures, and it's a pop up book. It's a children's pop up book. Here we go. Right.
A children's book on Hal and Joanne's adventures is not a terrible adventures, idea. I'm not
getting
lie.
getting fitness over to the kids like that. Huh?
It's not. I'm saying.
Yeah. Talk to my agent Chris and
15%. 15%. I've already said it. It's documented here on the show. So we'll talk.
It's not your stupidest idea, Tidwell.
Well, and that's, you know, it's funny, about 8 years ago, Joanne and I, seven years ago, Joanne and I hiked through Ireland. We went 150 kilometers in 4 days and through the mountains of Ireland. And it was a great hike. And I said to her at the time, I said, you know, if we film this and film our adventures, the adventures of Hal and Joe, you know, maybe we could put it up on that thing, YouTube thing. And what do you think? And she said, nah, no, nobody's going to watch us just hiking through, you know, telling, you know, stories of, you know, how we did this. I said, yeah, well, and then I see on YouTube now, everybody who does a trip does this stuff. And I go, oh, you know, I think about that. But and funny because friends of mine have said that, you know, Body Break was YouTube before YouTube. And because we came up with this short thing, people would see it and boom, it was gone. And it was, so it was kind of, you know, we started that over 35 years ago. And you know, it's been a great ride. We've been so lucky and so, and that's where, you know, I think every person that you have on your podcast, every person who's had a measure of success in any capacity, if they don't say that luck has played a pivotal role in what they've got and where they've gotten, they're fooling themselves and their abilities. Because I often think of this, just you have choices to make. There's splits in the road that you make, and you go to the right or left, and you don't really know, am I going right, left, which is a better road? And you take the left road, and it's a success. Or it's not a success, but you learn from it, and then you took a different road at the next juncture. And so I think luck, I look back and say, you know, like meeting Sheila Grad, that was nothing. That was luck, meeting this one person who believed in us and had a vision, and it certainly helped catapult us. So.
But to play the other side of the coin for a sec, Hal, and this will transition nicely to the next thing I want to talk to you about, is one of my
longtime mentors. He was my coach in high school. He was a mentor of mine when I finished high school. Passed away a few years ago. Coach Rick Maloney also played in the CFL. Was a hell of a CFL player, and he was a great basketball coach. Taught me a lot. Rick used to say to me, one of his many life lessons, and I know he stole this from somewhere, but I don't know where, so I always attribute it to him, but he always said to me, there's no such thing as luck. Luck is laboring under correct knowledge. So what he would have said is, yes, you had that meeting with that woman at Sears, but it was you who had the foresight to even approach Sears, which was an out-of-the-box thought to begin with. You had the correct knowledge. You put yourself in position to have that lucky thing happen. And I think there's a lot of people out there who say, oh, that person got lucky. Yeah, but you're never going to find a super successful person that's also not the hardest worker in the room. That's pretty rare. So I think that there is a degree of putting yourself in a position to receive that luck.
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, the 20 hours a day that you work, you get luckier the harder you work.
It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah. Well, but when you, when so many people, they grandize their success and they don't reflect back and say, you know what? I can pinpoint lucky breaks along the way that I got. And it was just people who helped me. And that's where I look at it, is that there were so many people that I was fortunate to meet these people who were able to guide me or help me or give me a suggestion. And so I look at that as Joanne and I worked extremely hard. We would put going to bed. So we go to bed like 1 or 2 in the morning, and we'd be talking about body break and how we had to do things and this and that. And it's like, and this is 1992, 93, 94, 95, to a point where we had to say, okay, we cannot talk about body break past 10 p.m. because we'd be talking about stuff. Okay, well, how are we going to shoot this shot? How are we going to do this? The script and that, all those things. So there's just, we worked extremely hard, but I think you have to tip your hat to those who helped you and how fortunate you got. I mean, too rosy or whatever, but the fact is that I feel very lucky that in 1956, in December, my mom told my dad, when I was born in Newark, New Jersey, and my mom told my dad, we're moving back to Canada. My dad was American, my mom's Canadian. She goes, I hate the U.S., we're moving back to Canada. And I said, because she didn't want me to grow up in the U.S. Now, I had nothing to do with it at 6 months old.
Sure.
But I was lucky, and I've told my mom that, who just turned 90 last week. I told her, I said, thank you so much for coming to Canada. And that's where I look at all Canadians, and you see what is happening around the world. We have to think about how lucky we are to live in this place that gives us so much opportunity. I mean, Pierre Poilievre wouldn't say that, but it was, because everything, I thought he was going to blame Trudeau for Hamas invading Israel. I mean, I think, everything Trudeau. And again, I'm like you, Donnie. Trudeau is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
And I think he's done some things that are questionable. That are right. But I think, by and large, our country is pretty good. And I appreciate living here.
I'm calling bullshit. I'm calling bullshit. Pal. You come talk to me in 3 months, all right, when it's the dead ass cold of winter out there. Okay. Yeah. And we're going, and we're all sitting here going, man, I just want to be someplace warm right now. This is okay. How much more do we got? Oh, we got another 4 months of this. Oh, this is garbage. Right? We all do it every single time.
My daughter, when it snowed up here, my daughter got up screaming, oh my God, we got snow. Oh, I hope it stays. She's a cross country skier and just loves it. She just loves it. So it's like you embrace what we have here, you know. And that's what I'm saying. If you embrace what you do, I want to cycle. Well, I've got my my trainer over here cycling through the winter. Set yourself up. You can set yourself up for failure or set yourself up for success. And there's always a way to get through things. There's always a way. If you, you know, it was funny because just a little thing last, I about a month ago, I cut the cable in our, I do a lot of construction stuff, whatever, but anyway, I cut a internet cable that went from the house up to here to the gym. And so I wouldn't have bad internet like Donnie has with the staggered screen there, but I cut that cable, and it was in an O pipe. So I couldn't fix the cable. So I'm thinking, how do I not lay another O pipe? So I I sat there for half an hour, looked at it, and I figured out how I could feed this 100-foot cable from one end to the other, and I did it. And it was like, there's always a way. So you're going to run into things, and there's always a way to get through things.
You're supposed to call before digging, Hal.
But I'm the one who put in the pipe. I still cut it. Like, what an idiot. That's just me.
By the way, I've been handed a note for the audience out there. Hal's 90-year-old mother, who you mentioned, she's doing a 500-kilometer snowshoe hike on Monday. So that will be vlogged and posted on YouTube. My former coach, Rick Maloney, and one of the reasons I wanted to transition, and one of the things I wanted to talk about, this is one of the last things I'll ask you about, Hal, because I know it's getting late. But we found out this past week, just a couple days ago, that legendary basketball coach Bobby Knight passed away. Yeah. And last week on the show, we interviewed the first and only Canadian head coach in men's basketball, Chris Kraus, who I had the opportunity to coach when he was a young man. And Chris is the ultimate player's coach, right? The antithesis of a Bobby Knight. Chris's father, George Kraus, who's in the Niagara Falls Sports Hall of Fame and was a legendary basketball coach at Markham District High School for decades and decades, was also one of my mentors. He used to tell me stories about when he first started teaching at Markham District High School and coaching, that there was an older teacher there that would get pissed off with the attitude of the student athletes, and he would bring a gun into the gym. A gun. Like, this guy makes Bobby Knight go, whoa, that's too much. So it's way too obvious to ask you the question, right? Like, will there be another Bobby Knight? Because obviously those days are gone. So my more poignant question is, when you were a young student athlete, did you have coaches that were a little bit more like Bobby Knight?
I had a couple. One in my first year of college, he wasn't very, very nice. But generally speaking, I had some really good coaches. The best coach I had was a Long Beach, and he was a great coach. But by and large, you know, baseball. But it's funny because you think of the different sports, like baseball coaches are different, generally speaking. Billy Martin and Earl Weaver as exceptions to that. But generally speaking, there's so many games, you can't be that up all the time. You can't be that psycho, like hockey coaches and that intense. It's just you can't do that, and it's a different style and rhythm than basketball or football or hockey. So baseball coaches were different. They're more, generally speaking, they're more put you their arm around you and say, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that, as opposed to, you know, hitting you over the head. And because in baseball you're only successful 3 out of 10 times, you're an all-star. You can't be too hard on a guy. So I was very fortunate. So I never responded well to people who kind of laid the lumber down. But that being said, I'm an old school guy in terms that you show up on time, you show up prepared to work, and you literally put 100% in all the time. And that's what I did at practices. And I always think practice is more important than when you play. So if you play like you practice. So I'm very much I listened to Prime at University of Colorado here. I'm a big Buffs supporter, and he's an old school coach. And I, in that respect, puts his arm around the guy, but he also, gives him a kick in the butt on occasion, which is good too.
It's his own kid. It's his own kid. You know what I mean? And they have this tradition, and I think it's so great because they talk about it all the time. They take that walk before the game, right down the sideline. And when they get down to the end, he's until they get down to that first turn, right? He's father and son. As soon as they turn around to come back to the team, he's coach and player. And it's time to go to work. You know what I mean? Listen, they don't have the greatest team, but I love the way that he's changing the culture there to become winners. It may not be this year, but you can see the improvements that he's had just building these young people's, morale and abilities and stuff like that. Because, let's face facts, in the world of NCAA football, what, 10% of those guys are going to go on to play in the pros. You know what I mean? It's low. It's super low. You know what I mean? So the fact that they get this opportunity with a guy like Prime, that's a Super Bowl ring in itself, I would think.
The fact too that one of the most braggadocious, media hated players of all time is now holding court as a head coach, and they can't shut him off.
Yeah. But what's great, what I find is really good as an alum from University of Colorado, what's so heartwarming is seeing the shots of University of Colorado, where I played, where I went to school. And when you see the shots of the football stadium and the, what they call the Flatirons, those are the mountains behind the football stadium. Mm-hmm. It's picturesque. I mean, people who've never been there go, wow, that's beautiful. And it is as beautiful as it looks. In fact, it's one of the top five campuses in the U.S. as a campus. And it's one of the top five. It's absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous. And the campus itself is just awesome. And I've taken there a couple of times. So it's really nice seeing it. When I was there, there was a coach called Chuck Fairbanks. And for those, nobody's probably ever heard of Chuck Fairbanks, but Chuck Fairbanks was the coach of the New England Patriots. And Chuck came to the University of Colorado when I was there, and he was paid $1 million a year. And that was back in 1979, 80. And so professors and people were wearing t-shirts calling it Chuck Fairbanks U, as opposed to University of Colorado, because he was being paid more than, like, professors were being paid like $40,000 a year, and he's getting $1 million. And so, and he didn't really win, but Prime has brought in, Deion Sanders has brought in so much money and so much publicity. And what people don't understand about that is that kids who were, let's say, chemistry majors or whatever, they go, oh, I want to go to that university now. They're not football players. So the enrollment of to go there is even going to go up. Now, the price tag to go to that university is expensive. For out of state, it's going to cost you $60,000, $70,000 a year in tuition, then upwards of beyond that. And it's and again, I feel so fortunate to have – and I remember at the time getting a full ride there going – and I remember coming to the football stadium because that's where all the coaches, all the teams' offices were on a Saturday. And I pulled up with my 1973 Catalina station wagon, walked into the coach's office, and it overlooked the football field. And I looked at it, and I thought, I've arrived. I've actually felt successful. Like I'm a major college baseball player, and I felt pretty neat.
Al, you are only as the luck is only as good as what you make of it. You've obviously done very well to capitalize on these lucky, you know, I'm throwing them up there for the people listening and not seeing these lucky moments that you've had your entire life. You've taken advantage of them, rightfully so. Nobody is ever, ever, ever going to accuse you of doing anything less than 100%. You show up to work no matter what it is. If you're going on a 100-mile bicycle ride or sitting with our stupid asses doing this show for, you know, the last hour. I personally want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. It has been, as always, you are such an inspiration to so many people out there that you're a historical landmark at this point, I think, to Canadians. You know what I mean? Like, literally. So there is no getting rid of you. They're going to bronze you
in the McKenzie house.
Making a statue won't be good enough. They're going to have to dip you in actual bronze and put you up down at Queen's Park or something, right?
Well, I'm sure the dogs will be peeing on me, so, you know. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Hal. We appreciate your time.
Okay, but until next time, keep fit.
All right. Have fun. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, Donnie.
As we wrap up, I was going to share one quick thing. I don't know if you ever had a coach like a Bobby Knight. Did you?
No, not so much. I mean, listen, here's the thing. I had wrestling coaches, so I think they were all kind of like that. You know what I mean? They're very, quite a few of them used to be former Marines, and you know what I mean? Drill sergeants, basically, right? But I think that each sport, you're a product of your environment. I think that the football environment is different than the basketball environment. I think that the baseball environment is different than the, you know, soccer, not really a sport environment. Like I get it. So you kind of become a victim of the culture that you're in for that stuff. So, right.
I had coaches in high school that weren't like Bobby Knight, but they would say things to me like, "Hey, you're the 6'6" kid that's out there to set screens and get rebounds. Don't even think about shooting the ball or your ass is sitting down." So I would get that a lot, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, whatever. We got better shooters on the team. I don't get to take shots. I understand.
Yeah.
My first couple of years coaching high school basketball, I coached with this guy. I'm not going to name his name. And he was one of these like kicking water bottles, screaming and swearing at refs, snapping clipboards. One of these guys, and I was his assistant. And you know what I found after the end of my first season with him? I was turning into him. That was rubbing off on me.
Yeah.
And I was so disgusted with myself. That's when I went and switched programs and I went somewhere else. And then I had an opportunity to head coach my own program. That following season, this is when I knew how out of touch this guy was. Okay. He had the best roster in the region. Never won a championship, had the best roster in the region. He's coaching senior girls basketball. So he's got, you know, grade 12 girls, the best ones in the area.
Nice.
I'm at a brand new school that only goes up to grade 9 and 10. So I'm coaching grade 9 and 10 girls at the senior level versus grade 12s. Because I figured, hey, if we get our asses kicked, we're supposed to, because we're a couple of years younger, but they'll get better as the time goes on. We go in and we play them in our second or third game of the season, my former team against my former head coach. We blow them out. We beat them by 30 something points. What does he say at the end of the game? Does he come over to me and go, "Wow, man, you've done a good job with these grade 9 kids"? No. You know what he says? "Well, of course you won. Look how many blacks you have."
Oh, you had a lot, did you? A lot.
This is what he said to me. "Look how many blacks you have." I was like, bro. And then he goes on about how the referees clearly favored me. And I'm like, this guy doesn't get it. And still to this day, like the last time I ran into him, we talked a little bit of basketball, he still doesn't get it. And it's like, oh my God, I was so fortunate to like veer away from that toxic channel and then carve out my own path. And I think about those kids that went to Indiana or Texas Tech, and it's like, how many of those kids turned out to be assholes, you know, dealing with Bobby Knight every day? You know, God rest his soul, he was a fiery, passionate competitor, but he was an asshole.
Yes, and sometimes you have to have that kind of a coach to have that kind of a winning streak too. You know what I mean? There's just certain things that certain people react differently to certain coaching. You know, if it wasn't the case, then MMA fighters and boxers, there would be a straight down the line method of coaching for these guys, and that would be it. But you know as well as I do, some people react to having their face slapped before they get into a fight or getting yelled at in between rounds by their coaches, whereas other guys have to be like, oh, coach, my groin hurts. Okay, well, hit him with your groin. What are you going to do? You know, people react differently. So the fact that there's so many different coaches out there doing great things, like Jerry Tarkanian wasn't that type of a coach, you know what I mean, that Bobby Knight was, but just as good a winner, I mean, if not better, depending on the year. But Tark, right, Tark, so man. There's Tark the Shark was the best. Are you kidding me? You know, so like, there's all kinds of room for all of that stuff. But it's a shame that we may never see that kind of a character in coaching that we saw in Bobby Knight anymore. So
Before we go, I just want to mention, because I did mention this earlier and I don't want to screw up the plug. My cousin, Humberto da Silva, is releasing his first book. He's written many things, short stories and different pieces over the years that have been published, but this is his first book that he's releasing. It's called Compassion Fatigue and Other Stories of the Indecent Past, Weird Present, and Feared Future. It's an absolutely incredible read. The launch party is going to be November 8th. For those of you in the Greater Toronto Area, it's at Castro's Lounge, 2116 Queen Street East. It's going down at 9 p.m. next week, November 8th. And it is a fantastic book. I encourage you all to read it from the mind of a self-proclaimed rebel rouser, anarchist, establishment fighter, freedom fighter, a guy that believes in all things good and just in the world. And he's got a very unique mindset and maybe the smartest human I've ever met in my life. And that's saying something, because I think I'm pretty fucking smart. But he may be the smartest person I've ever met in my life.
You're a moron.
You're more
exactly. You're more off. Does his book have nudity in it?
Maybe.
Doesn't.
Doesn't. There's probably some implied nudity, I'll tell you that.
Is it a pop-up book? I'm out. Forget it. A nude pop-up book.
It's got a funky cover. Look. It's got a funky cover.
There you go. All right.
All right. So I'll post all that up on godfathersofpodcasting.com. That's it for me.
That's it. And for me, you know, you can check out all of the stuff over at the YouTube channel at Tid Talk, where you get that. That's at TIDTALK on YouTube, or you can follow me on the socials at Notorious TID as usual, on X, on Threads, on Instagram, on Donner, on Dasher, on Blitzen, which is what I'm going to do now. Is I'm going to go get on Blitzen or get my Blitz on, one of the two. It's going to be a very long weekend. We've got a lot of stuff happening for next week. So what do you know? Donnie?
I'm Donnie. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me, I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.